Welcome to the Health Headlines Unpeeled podcast, where we peel back the science behind the headlines to help you make informed decisions about your health, nutrition, fitness, and well-being to lead a more productive and satisfying life. I'm Stephen Clark.
And I'm Jill Joyce, and we are excited to begin the next episode of Health Headlines Unpeeled from the Department of Nutritional Sciences at Oklahoma State University. And today we have a special episode for you. So we're kind of veering off of actually talking about headlines to kind of, in a way, creating our own evidence-based headlines. So today we're going to talk to Dr. Mikhail Montgomery, one of the professors in our department, who has an incredibly special talent. She is an insane marathon runner. Like, insanely good.
She's very fast.
Yes. She passes me like 8 times at the lake.
Yeah, I don't even run with her anymore.
I don't run with her. She runs by me while I'm running.
Anyway, we're excited to bring you a discussion with Dr. Montgomery about sports nutrition.
Focused on fueling kind of before, during, and after marathon training, but also race day. Because we have the big marathon race season is about to start here in Oklahoma. We have the Oklahoma City Marathon because of COVID kind of moved to this fall. So hopefully we'll catch you all before that starts. And then all the other races are coming up. Army 10 Miler, Marine Corps Marathon, Boston. So there's a lot coming up.
And a bike race.
Oh, yeah. And bike races.
Let's not forget bike races.
Yep. Route 66.
Uh-huh. Or something over in Arkansas that I'm doing in a few weeks.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it should be fun. Not far from Bentonville. All right. Well, without further ado, let's dive into this interview with Mikhail. We hope you enjoy it.
All right. We've got with us today Dr. Mikhail Montgomery. And Dr. Montgomery, do you want to tell us a little bit about what this special episode is all about and what we're here for today?
Sure. We're here today to talk about fueling for your marathon, for both marathon training and marathon racing. And we're doing this special episode today because we're into about the most epic fall marathon season to have ever taken place in the United States, both here in Oklahoma and across the country. Oklahoma City Marathon's 4 weeks from today. And yeah, so we want to make sure that we're all fueled up and geared and ready to go.
Awesome. Well, before we get started, Dr. Montgomery, can you tell us a little bit more about how you got to OSU and maybe about your history as a dietitian?
I did my undergraduate degree down in Texas at Texas Christian University, where I ran on a track scholarship, but I'm from Oklahoma originally, so I was excited to come back to Oklahoma for a graduate degree, where I focused on research, a little bit more molecular type research, but I've finished my degree here at Oklahoma State. And even though I don't practice as a dietitian, I use the skills that I learned during that every day, during my everyday life, to train for marathons and to teach future dietitians and doctors and practitioners. And I'm excited to kind of share what that knowledge that I use daily to kind of help other people hopefully have their best race this season as well.
So cool. And just to be clear, you are one of our many registered dietitians in the department, right?
Yes.
So Dr. Montgomery, you mentioned that you ran in college on a track scholarship. So first off, what did you do in track? What was your favorite event? And then I'm guessing that connects to why we're talking about what we're talking about today. So how does that connect?
All right. So in college, I ran the 5K and 10K primarily. I also ran cross country. 10K was definitely my favorite event because I tend to be a little bit stronger the further I go. After college, there's not a lot of great opportunities to race on the track anymore unless you're a professional athlete. And so the next logical step was to transition up to half marathons and marathons. And so I actually ran my first marathon when I was a graduate student here at Oklahoma State, and I was trying to qualify for the Olympic trials for 2012, and I ended up missing out doing that by about a minute back in 2012, but I wasn't deterred. I tried again in 2016, where I missed by 6 seconds, and I tried again for the 2020 Olympic trials qualifiers, where I sailed past it and qualified by more than 5 minutes, and so I'd like to point out, and kind of why I'm here, wanting to share this with you today is the switch that happened between 2016 trials, well, 2012 and 2016 trials, and the 2020 trials, whenever I found much more success, was that I started treating my diet like part of my training regimen, and that really kicked myself into gear. And you would think it wouldn't have taken a dietitian so long to start practicing what she preached, but hey, it takes, sometimes these things take time.
So you mentioned that you learned a lot over the last few years in terms of fueling for marathons. What are maybe some of the two or three top things that you would recommend to other runners for thinking about in terms of preparing to be successful in fueling strategies for their marathon or running event?
Probably a key thing in that I've started thinking about with my diet, and especially my diet for training, is really focusing on understanding what my needs are. We are really quick to think about cutting things out for training. Oh, I'm training for a marathon, that means no soda. But really, I've spent time thinking about what do I need to perform my best. And so that understands with understanding how many calories do I need? Am I getting enough energy to support how much I'm training? How much protein do I need? Am I getting enough protein to repair the muscles that I'm tearing down whenever I'm working hard every day? And critical part is hydration. Am I replacing the fluids that I'm losing when I'm running every day? Am I replacing them effectively? And a big part of that for me has been learning to replace those fluids while I'm running. Am I hydrated while I'm running and not just waiting till the end whenever I'm totally zonked out and then trying to replace everything?
To recap, what I think we just heard is, number one, make sure we have enough energy to support our training. Number two, make sure that we have adequate protein intake to support our training and recovery. And then number three, focus on hydration. And I guess that's been particularly important for you over the last few months as it's been summer and you're preparing for these long events. You're probably getting up and running like at 4 o'clock, knowing you. You know, what are some of the strategies you've used to really prehydrate for your training?
Goodness, that's a great question that I wish I could eloquently answer. Actually, I wish I could honestly answer and say that I do some considerable pre-hydration, but because of that, it's so hot, I get up very early and take off running. There's not a lot of time to pre-hydrate before a 5 a.m. start. So I definitely keep a water bottle by my bed so that if I'm waking up in the night, I'm drinking in the night. And one of the things that I've done and I've taken to heart is I understand how much water I'm going to lose during that run. And I know that in advance because I've measured my sweat rate under many conditions. So I have an idea of, you know, in the mornings, right now it's 75 degrees and 90% humidity out, which is miserable. And during that time, I can actually lose as much as 5 pounds of water in an hour to an hour and a half of running. So I need to plan to consume that much water as much as possible to replace or stay on top of that fluid loss while I'm run. Now that's different, thank goodness, upcoming in the winter months, where my sweat rate will drop considerably to maybe 1 to 2 pounds of water per hour, an hour and a half. But because I know that, I can plan to meet those needs on the go.
All right. So you mentioned that protein is also an important factor in kind of your training nutrition. So the protein to carb ratio, what do you need to be targeting based on mileage and a marathon buildup?
Okay, that's a great question. So I really want to start with a little bit of vocabulary to get us oriented to how we're using proteins versus carbohydrates versus fats for energy while we're running. So if we start with that, one of the terms that I'm going to use is glycogen. Glycogen is your body's storage form of carbohydrates. So in those my early morning workouts and during those long marathon races, we're going to be relying on the glycogen that's stored in our body to fuel us during those events. Another term that I might use to describe where we're pulling that energy from, again, carbs versus proteins versus fats, the foods that we eat, is VO2 max. VO2 max's measure of oxygen consumption while you're running. It's a reflection of cardiovascular fitness. So the higher someone's VO2 max is, generally, the more cardiovascularly fit they are. But here we're going to talk about percent VO2 max, and we use it as an indicator of exercise intensity. So at a low exercise intensity, a low percent VO2 max, we tend to use primarily fats as an energy substrate. But as that exercise intensity increases, to effort increases to closer to race pace, the percent VO2 max goes up, and we start to rely much more on carbohydrates as an energy source. And so I feel like I need to give that background of percent carbs versus percent protein intake during marathon training, and particularly marathon racing, is as our intensity builds up to race pace intensity, we're using almost exclusively carbohydrates to fuel our bodies. And so in marathon training and racing, carbohydrates should make up the majority of your calories. Typically, I'll say at least 50 to 60% of your total calorie intake should be coming from carbohydrates. And getting this adequate carbohydrate intake from our diet ensures that we have maximal glycogen loading so that we maximally store our carbohydrates, and maximal glycogen restoration so that after the workouts, we rebuild and refuel our bodies so that we can do it again the next day and the next day and the next day. And in doing that, that helps protect against muscle protein breakdown because we're using stored carbohydrates for energy and not protein that we want to use to build our muscles. So I typically say don't go less, especially in marathon training, than 50 to 60% carbohydrates for fueling you.
All right, Dr. Montgomery, so you mentioned that, you know, as you're getting closer to your race pace and higher intensities, that you use a lot more carbohydrates, higher intensity, lower intensity, you're using more fat for fuel. Now, is there a difference between, now, so I'm definitely not a trained marathon runner. Far from it. I like 5K land. So if I started transitioning to training for a marathon, my pace would be much slower than yours. Does that alter the substrate that I'm using or kind of like how I should fuel?
Absolutely. It's absolutely going to change how, you know, the type of substrate that you're using while you're training, carbohydrates versus fats being your substrate you're using for energy, and how you're using that. Certainly a more trained individual has a capacity over time to develop an ability to run at a higher intensity for longer periods of time. And so as you're just beginning to start out and your goal is to finish, which is a fantastic goal for a marathon, just getting out there and finishing, you're probably going to be burning a little bit more fats as an energy substrate and might not have as high of carbohydrate requirements during that event as someone like myself or someone who's trying to, you know, compete at a more elite level.
All right, Dr. Montgomery. So another thing that I often hear about, especially because if I go out for a run, I mean, my runs are more like a half hour long. So if I'm only running for like a half hour to maybe 60 minutes max, do I need to fuel with carbohydrates during my workouts? Because I'll admit, sometimes it makes my stomach hurt a little bit. So, you know, do I really need to fight through that and figure out how to do it? Or is it maybe okay to not if I'm under an hour?
Recreational athletes and even elite athletes, if they're working out for an hour or less, to as much as even 90 minutes or less, do not need to consume carbohydrates during that run. This hot weather, you definitely want to make sure you're sticking with water. You may even choose a drink that has some electrolytes in it to replace this what you're losing in sweat. But you definitely don't need carbohydrates during a 30 to 60 to even 90 bout of exercise. And in fact, there's some evidence that says that that could hinder your ability to go longer on your stored fuel substrates that you've already got available in your body.
All right. And so when it comes to workouts, protein, I feel like the minute we hear workout and nutrition, our minds automatically go to protein. So what is the role of protein pre-run, during your run, and in that recovery phase?
So I think something that's often misinterpreted about protein. We eat it, and so it has calories, which means it can provide energy. But when we're talking about running, our goal for the protein that we consume in our diet is actually not to use it to meet our energy needs. It's to use it to promote muscle repair after we break it down during the workouts, and to muscle recovery, and to promote more new muscle protein synthesis, and to preserve that lean mass. And so you don't necessarily need to consume a lot of protein before a workout, because you're going to hopefully be using mostly carbohydrates and fats to meet your energy needs during that. But you want to make sure you're getting enough afterwards and then throughout the day. And so for an endurance athlete, they really want to shoot for protein goals somewhere between 1.5 to 1.8 grams per kilogram. Is a pretty good goal. So if you're a 150-pound athlete, that's up roughly 68 kilograms. And so you're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 to 120 grams of protein a day. For myself, just as a reference, I'm a pretty elite marathon runner. I run between 90 and 100 miles a week. I only weigh 115 pounds, but I still shoot for at least 100 grams of protein today to maximize my muscle recovery, to make sure I can get out there and do it again the next day.
All right, Mikhail. So you're consuming somewhere between 100 to 120 grams of protein per day. How do you split that up, and what does that actually look like on a daily basis for you in terms of intake?
That's a great question, and that's something I've been working on a lot and really been optimizing over the last 6 months to a year. And so in the day, that sort of starts with breakfast, right? And so I run first thing in the morning, and so my first meal, I still prioritize carbohydrates to replace those that I use to meet my energy needs, but I certainly want some protein to be in there as well. I will shoot for a high-protein cereal, or adding some chia seeds to my oatmeal, to still make sure I'm hitting at least 20 grams of protein within that breakfast meal, but it's still mostly carbohydrates. And then I try to break that up evenly throughout the day. There's a lot of science that says protein is best absorbed, best utilized, most efficiently used for muscle protein synthesis if we spread that intake out evenly through the day. So at least 20 grams I'm shooting for at breakfast, and then I'll try for 20 to 25 grams at lunch. And I try to vary that with meat, nuts. I do like, and then in the afternoon, I'll throw in a Greek yogurt with some granola to hit another 15 to 20 grams. And then I tend to eat meat at night because I tend to have time to actually cook meat at night. So another 20, 25 grams. And again, that splits that up evenly to roughly get me to about 100 every day, plus or minus.
Great. And I'm afraid I'm going to open up Pandora's box here. Talk to us about protein supplements. Do you use them? Are they needed for the average athlete? Are they wasting money? Are they investing wisely? Talk to us about protein supplements and keep it relative to running.
I do not feel that protein supplements are a wise investment for the majority of us. For the majority of us, we are more than capable of meeting our protein needs through diet alone. And a lot of the protein that we eat through foods is much more readily absorbed and utilized by our bodies than those that are found in supplements. In fact, supplements can get you into a little bit of trouble with absorbing different amounts of protein in inappropriate proportions from what you would actually need for recovery, versus food, which is already optimized to best fit your needs.
All right. So while we're still on the topic of protein, do you have any advice for recovery between workouts, which maybe that also helps with injury prevention?
Yes, absolutely. And I think this is probably my soapbox of dietary interventions for marathon training and really promoting your best self and getting to the start line healthy and happy and injury free. And that's timing your meals appropriately. And there's a whole facet we can get into about how you should time your meals before you get out for a run, but a lot of that really has to do with what your tummy can tolerate. Timing your meals after the run is what helps you recover properly. And if you're recovering properly, you can are more likely to stay away from injury and getting those nagging injuries, because if you're working out tired and not recovered, things can start to go wrong. And so most important thing, and this is something I religiously do, is always eat within 30 to 60 minutes after finishing a workout. Delaying that carbohydrate intake especially is going to interfere with your ability to restore that glycogen, and it impairs your ability of your muscles to recover. And so within the first 30 to 60 minutes after a meal, you want to consume a meal that has both carbohydrates and protein. Optimal ratio of carbs to protein immediately after a workout, somewhere in the area of 4 to 1. And so if you're trying to look for ideas of what that is, and sometimes I have an upset tummy too after a workout, a good magic 4 to 1 ratio recovery fuels, chocolate milk has a 4 to 1 carb to protein ratio. Soy milk, if you have lactose intolerance, is 5 to 1, so it's not quite there. Meal replacement shakes that a lot of people kind of like is more like 3 to 1. So at least you're close and in the ballpark. You want to stay away from bars. The Clif bars happen to be 4 to 1. I'm not sponsored by Clif Bar, but they just happen to be a 4 to 1 carb to protein ratio. You want to stay away from those high protein bars. They're not optimized. Peanut butter crackers have about a 4 to 1 protein to carb ratio. So that's what you're looking for. If you consume a full meal, that's great. Or if you can consume a full meal, that's great.
All right. So you mentioned chocolate milk, which is delicious. And I'm a runner sometimes. So after my run, how much chocolate milk, if you could ballpark it for me, how much should I drink?
Right. So actually, it's probably not as much as some of us would like to be. I also think chocolate milk is delicious and like to go for it. But even if you just have a 2-cup serving of chocolate milk, or, you know, if you're running from the gas station with your running crew, going in and buying the bottle of chocolate milk, you're going to be already at almost 16 grams of protein if you consume the entire thing, which is close to that 20 gram mark that I was recommending. And so you know that's plenty to refuel immediately after. And then of course you might want to get breakfast later to get your calorie intake in and other nutrients that you need as well.
All right, so we've talked a lot about protein, especially in the post-run recovery phase. So how about, you know, when you talk about endurance events, we always hear about carbohydrate loading. I ran cross country. We won't talk about at what level. It wasn't very high, which I'm okay with. But ironically, Olive Garden always had the never-ending pasta bowls on Friday nights right before the races. And of course, the entire team went. Is that carb loading and does it work?
So in answer to your question, is that carb loading? No, although that would be great. I think a lot of us, a misunderstood thing about carbohydrate loading is it's actually a diet and exercise regimen. So it's not just eating as much carbohydrates as you can in a single setting the night before. And for most of us athletes out there, the rigor involved in true carbohydrate loading does not outweigh the cons and risks associated with true carbohydrate loading. Most of us can get what we need by fueling during the race, during our run, and making sure we get a good breakfast in before we get started race day.
All right, so breakfast, morning of the event, of the race, what do you like to do? What do you suggest?
So I suggest making sure you get up early to get in an adequate amount of energy to meet your needs. And so you really need to plan your wake-up time appropriately. So if your race is at 8 o'clock, you want to actually think about waking up 3 to 4 hours in advance to get in enough breakfast to get you through a good part of that marathon. So if you're waking up 3 to 4 hours before race day, breakfast can look like something like a bagel with some peanut butter and banana. I'm a big oatmeal fan. I might do, you know, almond butter and a banana. If you don't wake up till 2 to 3 hours before the race, you might can get away with just bagel and a peanut butter. If you're 1 to 2 hours out, maybe a banana and peanut butter. And I always say if you're less than 1 hour out, try to at least get in a banana and know that you absolutely should have woken up earlier.
All right. So with this breakfast, should race morning be the first time I try this breakfast?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, you've never ran a marathon before, potentially. Neither has your tummy. So you have to practice it in advance. So you have to tell your stomach and give it time to practice too. In fact, whenever I ran the Olympic Trials Marathon, the race was at 1 p.m., which was unique. So I didn't have to worry about getting up early, but I had to worry about something I'd never done before, which was eat breakfast and lunch before a race. And so every single Saturday, at least once per week, I practiced eating breakfast and lunch and running at 1 p.m. so that I knew what my stomach could tolerate. And so same thing, if your race is at 8 a.m. on Sunday, at least once a week, you might want to try to get up, have breakfast, and then start a run at 8 a.m. so that you can do that. So, and that kind of brings me to, while race morning, of course, is really important, you want to practice race morning. Race day nutrition actually starts way before race day. It really starts race week. Okay, so we burn a lot of carbohydrates, some fats whenever we run. So carbohydrates are really critical to make sure that we're getting in plenty that week before and after you run. So first thing race week to think about for race day nutrition even still is do not perform an exercise that you are not absolutely confident you can't recover from. And then remember that you store carbohydrates as glycogen, and we store them efficiently after exercise. So this race week, that post-run fueling is absolutely critical. Make sure that you're not going longer than 30 to 60 minutes after your workout without getting in a meal. And something else that comes a little bit unique is, and some of us don't think about, but it's that packet pickup. Does anybody, I get more nervous about packet pickup than I get from the gun on the start line. And it's because I never know where to park or how long it's going to take and where I'm going. And so if you are going to go pick up your race packet during lunch, the day before the race, make sure that that's not at the cost of eating lunch the day before the race. If you're going to go after work, make sure that's not going to push your dinner time back 1 to 2 hours later than normal. So think about these things as you plan and make sure you're still getting all the food you need when you need it.
So much earlier, we were talking a little bit about the importance of hydration. And I think you mentioned this has been a particularly difficult summer in terms of trying to hydrate while exercising. And I have had multiple experiences this year while on the bike that I've never had before, where I've completely broken down after 4 or 5 hours of riding, even though I've consumed a few liters of water along with electrolytes. So can you revisit that conversation a little bit about what hydration looks like during the race and maybe some of the strategies that you use after working out or after the race to make sure that you replenish the fluids that you've lost?
Sure. So you really want to start out, if you can, if you have time, so race morning especially, getting in at least 16 ounces of fluid, you know, about 2 hours before you get going, if you can. And then while you're actually out there doing the work, you really want to try to get in about 6 to 8 ounces of water or sports drink, or 4 to 8 ounces every 15 minutes or so. It's a lot. That can change a little bit based on sweat rates, but when we're talking about these hotter conditions, training through July, August, and now September, and I'm still very hot out running, trying to get in as much as we can take. So shooting for 4 to 8 ounces of fluids every 15 minutes should be your goal. Now, something that I like to point out here and get asked a lot is, should it be water or should it be a sports drink? And again, that depends on the overall duration of your run or your ride and Dr. Clark's example. But if it's going to be less than 60 or so minutes, you're probably okay with just water. If you're a very salty sweater like myself, you might want to have more of an electrolyte supplement in there as well, with some, the Propel has water with electrolytes, Gatorade Zero. I like the Noon Hydration tabs, those types of things. And then after your exercise, you want to make sure you get in at least 16 ounces of water or for every pound or 16 ounces of water that you lose during that. And again, sometimes that means just weighing before and after and making sure. And that's absolutely critical. Sometimes I think you would surprise yourself at how much water you lose during. And so making sure that you understand how much fluid you need to replace and trying to get that back in within 2 hours after finishing your run is important. And so knowing how much you've lost and getting that replaced is important. And another way, if you don't want to weigh before and after or don't have time to, is kind of monitoring your urine color and how you feel. My goal, and it's been hard to do this summer, is if I run in the morning and I get to work and I don't need to go to pee until lunch, I'm probably not hydrated enough. If I go to the bathroom and my urine is darker than lemonade, I'm probably not hydrated enough. And so these are all clues that you still need to drink more fluids.
All right. So you mentioned checking your urine color to see how hydrated you are. And I've gotten a lot of questions from people in the past about, does a multivitamin wind up throwing that whole color chart off? You know, no, like lemonade, it looks like that all the time if I take a multivitamin sometimes.
That's a really great question, and I hadn't thought about that, so thanks for bringing it up. Taking a multivitamin, especially a sort of a higher dose multivitamin, is going to change your urine color, usually to a very bright yellow, and that's not going to change based on hydration status. So if that is the case for you, then monitoring your urine color as an assessment of hydration is probably not your best indicator, rather making sure that you're going to the bathroom enough, feeling recovered.
All right. And second question, you brought up a great point about weighing yourself to see how much fluid you've lost. How exactly do you do that properly?
So this weighing yourself properly to determine your sweat rate actually involves weighing in dry clothes before you start running and then after you stop sweating. So there's two parts to the end. So it's easy to think about, okay, I put on my, for me, sports bra and running shorts, I'm going to hop on the scale. But whenever I get back, I don't immediately stop sweating and my clothes are absolutely soaked. Instead of losing weight, they've actually gained some. And so I need to wait till I stop sweating, remove my wet clothes and replace them with dry clothes that are similar, and then weigh myself. And that's a much better indicator, more accurate indicator of how much water I lost during that run.
All right. And then you mentioned for every pound that you lose from that, we should then replace that with 16 ounces of water, correct?
That's right. You're wanting to shoot at least 16 ounces of water or fluid. And that could be, again, it could have some electrolytes in it. Could be some Gatorade or sports drink if it was a very long bout of exercise. And you really want to try to get that in within about 2 hours of finishing that exercise. And that's going to help promote recovery.
So I love this conversation regarding hydration, and it's one that actually could be an entire podcast in and of itself.
Yeah, I love that idea. We should totally do that.
So as we begin to wrap this conversation up, Dr. Montgomery, could you maybe share 3 important takeaways that our listeners could implement as they continue to train and or prepare for their next running event?
All right. I think number one is where we just left off. It's still really hot if you're listening to this immediately after recording. And so doing that first time, weigh yourself before your run, weigh yourself again in dry clothes after you stop sweating, have an understanding of how much you're sweating during and making sure you're actually adequately replacing all that fluid you're losing during training so that you're ready and healthy for race day. I think the second one that's easiest to go with is, without changing anything about your dietary intake, paying attention to the timing of your dietary intake. Am I getting in that first recovery meal within 30 to 60 minutes after I've finished my exercise for the day? And then the next one, maybe a little bit higher up level, is do the math today to figure out what your protein needs actually are. I mistakenly hadn't done that in years based on new recommendations, and found out about 6 months ago that I was only getting about half of the protein intake in that I needed each day. When I made that switch, I actually went from being a 234 marathon runner to a 232 marathon runner with doing nothing but eating more protein. So those are my three big ones.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Montgomery. That was fantastic. I know all the runners that are getting ready for their races this fall, hopefully as it cools down, really appreciate you and the seconds to minutes you're going to knock off of their race time. And not that you need it, but good luck to you when you run all of your upcoming marathons.
Thank you.
Well, that was another fantastic episode. We just want to thank our listeners for letting us unpeel health headlines with you, and in this case, create our own. We hope that you join us in our next episode, where we'll continue to peel back the science behind the headlines. Until then, thanks for listening.
On behalf of the Department of Nutritional Sciences at Oklahoma State University, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon. Cheers.